really enjoyed studying this section of Genesis. Almost said Exodus because we're reading in Exodus right now. Or is in Genesis in this class, and I hope you found this section encouraging. I want to just begin by just highlighting the key events, if you will, of this section. We'll talk about one or two of them perhaps up front, but then I'm hoping to just get into the application and talk some principles that I think we can take away from this section. These would be under the banner of lessons for Israel to learn, lessons for us to learn. I think there are lessons that perhaps Isaac and Rebecca learned along the way that provide a good opportunity for us in our time in 2025 as we walk before our God to reflect and to take to heart. So the section begins with kind of a rather odd way, perhaps, to our eyes. We've spoken about the generational organization of the book. In Hebrew, the word toledoth. And so you could say that these different books or toledoths are one way to organize the book and to study the book even. And toledoth number 7 of 10 is found here in 7 verses in chapter 25. We've been involved with the generations of Terah now for some 11, 12 chapters. And then in a matter of 7 verses, we'll cover another toledoth. Now, on the study guide, I asked this question. I don't often bring out a question from the study guide, but I want to actually get your thoughts on this. Why do you think, this was the first question, I wish now I had numbered these pages, but this is for Lesson 8, The Trust of Isaac. Why do you think a separate toledoth is devoted to the lineage of Ishmael? Why a section on Ishmael? I mean, he's already been sent away, right? He's not the son of promise. So then why does Moses, by inspiration, do you think, why does he circle back to Ishmael here after the death of Abraham? Scott, you want to weigh in on that?
My thinking about that is because Abraham was promised to be a father of many nations. It wasn't just the Israelite nation through Isaac and Jacob, who changed his name to Israel. And so part of the reason I think you get this recorded is because you wonder what the rest of the story. Ishmael gets sent away, but you realize then Ishmael turns out, I mean, there's going to be a huge nation that comes from Ishmael also. And so you see just God upholding his promise,
yeah,
that through Abraham you have many nations, not just one nation.
Yeah, that's right. God's purpose extends well beyond the concerns or the matters pertaining to one nation. The blessing promise makes clear that this scheme of God's to redeem man is going to eventually have an impact on people of every nation, and the manner in which he carries that out or brings that to fruition will involve people from other nations. We noted last week the Ishmaelites are going to work. This won't be the last time even here that we will read the name Ishmael. One other time in our study here yet tonight, and then when Joseph is taken in captivity to Egypt, it is Ishmaelite traders that take him there. We'll circle back to some of the other things you mentioned here in a second. Aaron, go ahead.
Later on, the Israelites are not going to be allowed to conquer various areas, and all of those areas are areas where they have relatives, Ammon, Moab, Edom, and other places where,
right,
those aren't places that were promised to the Israelites. They aren't to touch that territory. That's
right.
Those peoples. And so this is reinforcing, these people are your brothers.
Yep. and then we're to treat them accordingly, regardless of how they might have been treated in return. We need a microphone up here. Jim, you had your hand up.
Quick question.
Well, let's get up. He's almost here. Go ahead.
Wasn't it the Ishmaelites that refused to let the children of Israel cross their lands?
I want to say that was the Edomites. Was it the Moabites or the Edomites?
Okay.
Edomites. Would all be under the same umbrella that Aaron mentioned. So that connection was not necessarily honored by every participant.
But you did mention that when Joseph was sold.
Right. Joseph was sold to Ishmaelite traders. The Midianites are believed to be connected to the Ishmaelites. Some translations will mention that. I want us to think about I started going back and would encourage you to do this in your own time. Circle back and just make a list of the number of things that have been prophesied concerning Ishmael. It's quite a list. I'll run quickly through this for the sake of time. And I'm going to step back here because I forgot my readers. Hagar's descendants, chapter 16 and verse 10, will be multiplied. And we see that begin to come about here in this Toledoth. The naming of Ishmael was foretold. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him. And he will live to the east of all his brothers, from Shur to, I think verse 18 mentions, they settled from Shur to Havilah, an area all east of Egypt, basically the Arabian Peninsula. That's all in chapter 16 in verse 12, and I found it interesting that Genesis 25 verse 18 says he settled in defiance of all his relatives. So there is that us against the world sort of, maybe a sort of mentality. So Ishmael's the one cast out, and evidently there's a chip on his shoulder that went with him, and that's going to come to characterize this people that will perhaps respect no one and maybe not have too many friends, but will live in a perpetual conflict. God will bless Ishmael, chapter 17 and verse 20, make him fruitful and multiply him exceedingly. And chapter 17 and verse 20 says that he will become a father of 12 princes. Take a look at Genesis 25. Verse 16, these are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their villages and by their camps. 12 princes, just as God said, according to their tribes. So obviously one of the things that's coming out of this is what God says will happen. He has a purpose for Ishmael. Genesis 25 and verse 12 says, now these are the records of the generations of Ishmael. And then there's an appositive after that that says, Abraham's son. You'll find a similar expression in Genesis 25 and verse 19. So these two sons obviously are connected by their father, Abraham. And so for the sake of, this story centering on God's dealings with this one man, Abraham, Ishmael, you could say that would be a reason for returning to him and what God has said about him. God promised to bless Ishmael because he was Abraham's son. Multiple times, chapter 17 and verse 20, chapter 21 and verse 13, chapter 21 and verse 18 says, I will make of him a great nation. And isn't it interesting? Ishmael has 12 sons. And I always get the whole, what would be Jacob's connection to Ishmael? Ishmael would be his uncle, right? So Ishmael's nephew, of course, also has 12 sons, and he would make of Jacob a great nation. He would multiply him exceedingly. Well, God is going to some extent do the same thing with Ishmael. Obviously, he's not the son of promise. We're told that he lives in the wilderness in Genesis. He becomes an archer, dwells in the wilderness of Paran. His mother takes a wife for him from Egypt. And so those are, I guess, perhaps just some thoughts that would help us understand why it was important for the Holy Spirit to return to Ishmael to tell us about some of the developments and the names of his sons. In fact, there is a daughter of Ishmael that we will talk about later. So Jacob had 12 sons and a daughter named Dinah. Ishmael had 12 sons, and just interesting coincidence probably, 12 sons and a daughter, not named Dinah, named Mahalath or something like that. Sister Trish.
I was just thinking how the law said that the birthright went to the firstborn. How did they circumvent the law and let Isaac be the first?
I missed the question.
Well, the firstborn was supposed to be the one that inherited everything.
Right.
Legitimately, Ishmael was Abraham's firstborn, and Isaac was the second one.
Right.
How did they get around the law that said that the firstborn was the correct
one? Which law would this have violated?
That law
didn't exist yet, did it?
Firstborn was...
Yeah, God is going to institute that law under the Mosaic Covenant. Is that what you're referring to?
I guess I've got my time frame.
Yeah, the principle of the firstborn is going to be a very important one. In fact, just recently when we read in Exodus, in chapter 4, verses 21 through 23, I think it was, God instructed Moses to go to Pharaoh and say that Israel, now listen to the wording, Israel, of course, is the namesake of Jacob, right? Israel is my firstborn. Now, was Jacob chronologically the firstborn? No, that's what this text bears out. And yet God regards and treats him as such. There's this interesting pattern of this throughout the book of Genesis with, even all the way back to Genesis 4. Cain and then Abel. Now, what would be a lesson that we would... Well, you've got Cain and Abel. You've got Ishmael and Isaac. You've got Esau and Jacob. You've got 10 brothers of Joseph and Joseph. He wasn't even the second oldest, or the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh. What would be a lesson, I mean, to that question? There has to be some purpose to this, right? Because it does go against what we would expect. In fact, we're going to talk later. I think this very much went against the cultural norm of the time. And Isaac was of a mind to uphold that tradition, were it not for the intervention of his helpmeet. So clearly God has a purpose in this. Now what would that, let's take advantage of this, that's a great question. Why would this have been important for the children of Israel to know about? Why was Isaac so honored by Abraham?
He was the fulfillment of God's promise.
He represented the fulfillment of God's promise, of God's sovereign choice. Why did Israel exist at all? Not because they were all that, but because God chose them. It's my status, and this is true for us if you think about it. What is it that gives us identity and status and self-worth, it's going to ultimately be derived from our Creator, the one who spoke light into existence and who said, "Let us make man in our image." Our meaning and purpose in life is ultimately to be derived from God and as a function of His choosing, His will. I'm not saying that's the only explanation that would answer your question, but I think that that's at the heart of it. Any other thoughts about that? Anybody else want to weigh in? I think that's an excellent question. Okay, Daniel up here.
Just briefly, I think it's interesting to compare this to Romans chapter 9, where in Romans chapter 9, Paul is talking about how it's okay for God to change and pick and choose who His chosen people are. Right. And to support that point, he goes to these passages that we're discussing, that God picked Isaac, not Ishmael, and he picked Jacob and not Esau.
Right.
That God gets to pick who His chosen people are.
Right.
And so that's why it's fair for God to change His chosen people from being the Israelites to being Christians.
Right. Now, under the Mosaic law, if God says, honor the firstborn in such a way, ultimately, why would we choose to do that? Not just because a son happened to be chronologically the firstborn, but because it was God who so ordained. Okay? So ultimately, this comes down to an issue of God's sovereignty and honoring the purpose and will of God. Happy to discuss that, Sister Trish, with you a little bit later. Jesse, do you have a thought? Yeah.
He said, hey, do it, because culturally, then that's a proclamation that he was illegitimate, in essence, and that would have been the way around that.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, great question. So, chapter 25, 12 through 18, there's a lot to think about there, isn't there? What are these seven verses doing in our Bible? And now look at us, we're 20 minutes in. There's a lot to chew on there. Okay. Obviously, we need to hasten on here just a bit, but I appreciate those insights very, very much. Okay, we're just going to highlight these other ones here quickly, because I want to circle again, as I said, to the lessons for Israel. Twin sons are then going to be born to Isaac. We've essentially highlighted that. There's the appearance of the sons is noted. There's a lot of foreshadowing here, right? There's the appearance of Esau that is noted when he's born. There is what the hand of Jacob is doing as he exits the womb. He's grasping the heel of Esau. He's going to be the supplanter, the trickster, the one that will trip up his brother. That of course is going to come back to Jacob. Will get some of that coming back his way. Of course, in the previous section, there is this very important exchange between God's messenger and Rebekah, who is wondering what is going on with these, she doesn't know there are twins at this point, and is wondering, as any mother would, any mother-to-be, why the turmoil going on inside of me. The explanation is that two nations are in your womb. And of course, that's going to be something that we circle back to later in the blessing of Jacob and Esau. Well, then we switch our attention to Isaac. He is told to go and to dwell in similar language to what God says to Abraham all the way back in Genesis 12. Go to the land which I will show you. He says, sojourn in this land. We're talking about the city of Gerar. We're talking about the territory of the Philistines. He is going to have different interactions with not just Abimelech, the king of the Philistines. There will be a covenant. There are some parallels here between Isaac's life, especially here with regard to his time among the Philistines. He's going to have exchanges with the people of the land. There's going to be turmoil over what well belongs to who, and what's done to the wells that Abraham had dug following his death. We're going to see, you know, we see all of that. And then, of course, chapter 27 is the more well-known chapter where Isaac, of course, is, the chapter begins by stating that he is very old and his sight is dim. I think that's an important statement. We'll hopefully come back to that later. But, of course, he fully intends, I think, to honor the norm of the time. Somewhere along the way, I think Isaac has become intent on blessing Esau. Well, that's not the way it turns out at all. And so then as a function of that, the text tells us that Esau holds a grudge. It says he holds a grudge against Jacob, but I think, truth be told, he holds a grudge against Isaac and Rebekah as well. And to spite them later on is when he goes to Ishmael. He's already vexed Rebekah's soul through the marriages of the two Hittite women. That those two marriages. Well, then on top of that, to add insult to injury, he goes to Ishmael, where discontent is welcome. And from Ishmael, marries the daughter of Ishmael, the sister of the oldest, Nebaioth, who's the first of those 12 princes back in chapter 25. So Esau's got an axe to grind, maybe literally. Rebekah gets wind of it, and of course, wants to send Jacob away. Isaac, of course, sends him away with purpose. He sends him away with instruction. And so much of chapter 28, all of chapter 28, at the end of 27 into 28, Jacob is sent away. And then at the place that comes to be known as Bethel or Bethel, it is known as that because of a dream that Jacob has where he sees this ladder extending up into heaven, heavenly messengers ascending and descending. This is the, there's this great exclamation of Jacob on chapter 28. This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. What a dream that must have been. And it was moving. And so that's going to be an important part in Jacob's faith journey. Okay, so that's an overview. Wow, we did the rest of that in 5 minutes. Fantastic. All right, so let's talk now about some lessons for Israel as we go back in parts of this text and begin to think more deeply about this. Perhaps, Trish, your question was fortuitous because we've essentially discussed lesson number one. Israel is chosen by God. That would be an important takeaway. There could be others, just as there could be other answers to your question, I suppose. But Israel was certainly chosen by God. This should have been one of the things that is the initial readers of this account should have been brought home to their hearts, that they're chosen by God. Of course, what would be an application of that reality where the children of Israel are concerned? Just blurt it out without the microphone. If Israel is chosen by God and exists by the good pleasure of God, then
what's he going to do with the others?
What's he going to do with the other nations? Okay. What about for Israel? That's true.
What? Israel
in gratitude, with devotion. What were the two greatest commandments? This is the gospel. Grace and mercy are going to be shown, are being shown here in Genesis. Yes, in the Old Testament, grace and mercy are all over the place. At Mount Sinai, what will God say to them as kind of the preamble before the first of the Ten Commandments? I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. Do you see that fact, foundational truth, followed by appropriate conclusion? There should be a wholehearted love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. And then as an extension of that, horizontally, we also what? Love our neighbor as ourself. For indeed, I mean, what was Israel before God? They were literally nothing. It was at age 100 that Abraham has a son of promise, and from that son comes a great nation. Israel is chosen by God. Secondly, Israel, and I referenced Exodus chapter 4. Let's go and read that again. Exodus chapter 4. I think there is some, again, as we look at this through the lens of God's covenant relationship with the earthly nation of Israel, that interwoven in this narrative are some important lessons for Israel to take to heart. Exodus 4, verse 21, the Lord said to Moses, "When you go back to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders which I have put in your power, but I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. Then you shall say to Pharaoh, 'Thus says the Lord.'" This is how God saw Israel. "Israel is my son." Parents, we connect with that thought, don't we? I mean, whatever the ebb and flow is in our kids' life, they're our children, and there is a delight that we take in them. Israel is my firstborn. Israel is my son. So I said to you, "Let my son go." How would you have said that to someone who's holding your children? Not in a monotone, I promise you. Well, I mean, the mama's in the room. Anyway. "Let my son go that he may serve me. But you have refused to let him go. Behold," I want you to see the heat arising from this statement. "I will kill your son, your firstborn." That's exactly what happens. There's a relationship that God wants to have with his people, and he is being very upfront about what that. I delight in you. I brought you into being. I want to be your God. And anyway, so between the earthly relationships we're reading about and this spiritual relationship, there are all kinds of parallels. So Israel today, don't despise your birthright. We have a most favored status. Esau, if it wasn't so sad, it might be a bit comical. Who does that? Who would be so driven by the flesh that, I think it illuminates just how powerful the pull of the flesh can be, and why the Apostle Paul in the Spirit says, "Walk by the Spirit, not by the flesh." The deeds of the flesh are evident, but the fruit of the Spirit is. Walk by the Spirit. Anyway, I've got the rambles tonight. Number three, we have favor. So the point being, we have favored status. We should live accordingly in gratitude and devotion. We need a mic down here. Sister Cynthia. And I'll get a drink while I'm waiting. Go ahead.
Growing up, my mother used to, we used to talk about Jacob and Esau. And the story came out, selling his birthright for a mess of pottage. That was the terms that a lot of us grew up with.
For a mess of pottage.
Yes.
That red stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And now, here we are. We have all these blessings in Christ Jesus. Are we going to sell out for a mess of pottage, for something that does not exist tomorrow. It's for the gratification of the flesh. It is for today and today only.
We've got to be careful here, because that will preach and I'll just get carried away. But I mean, we all need to hear that, don't we? Isn't that just so? It's easy for us to look at Esau and think, well, you dummy. What are you doing? We're all susceptible to it. To completely lose our ever-loving minds and sell out for something that in the scope of eternity just doesn't matter. But in the moment, we build it up as, I gotta have it. And we don't. And God is clear. If we want to have it, He'll let us have it. And probably the statement would then apply, they have their reward in full. You better enjoy your reward, because that's all you're going to get. All right. Good point. I think there's a parenting lesson in this. I'll just ignore it and go, well, I'm not ignoring it. Do not parent per cultural norms, but rather according to the will of God. And let me just add to this some companion thoughts. Be governed by the Spirit, not the flesh, which we've emphasized. Well, we'll come back to that. I want to talk now for a couple of minutes about Isaac and Rebekah. Okay? Isaac and Rebekah. When I've studied this through the years, I've had mixed emotions about, you know, what do I do with Rebekah's actions, for instance, in chapter 27? She deceives her husband. I mean, no two ways about it. She deceives her husband. She is complicit. She is the mastermind, if you will, maybe a little bit of inflated language there, but I mean, she conceives this idea to deceive Isaac, to take advantage of the fact that he can't see very well, and his sense of taste and smell are heightened, and so she leverages that to make sure that Jacob secures the blessing. Just for the sake of Bible study, I want to give us perhaps a different way of looking at this. Just in the vein of, think about this, draw your own conclusion. Fair enough? I think about why this exchange is, and I need to get back to Genesis, back in chapter 26. It's not 26. It's 25. The children struggle together, verse 22. She says, if it is so, why then am I this way? Now I want you to see what the next statement says. She responds the right way. She responds the only way we could ever commend. What better? Could you come up with a better response to this? She goes to inquire of the Lord. I want to posit this. Isaac and Rebekah are people of faith. Now, is there ebb and flow in their faith? Sure. There's been ebb and flow in Abraham's family from the get-go. There's a tendency to deceive that is one of the parallels between Abraham and his son Isaac. And that tendency, we're not done with that, because Jacob is, at this point in the narrative, alive and well. And his sons will deceive him. So, anyway, Jacob will have lots of deception coming back his way. But Isaac and Rebekah are people of faith. Consider this. Just in this section alone, essentially chapters 25 through 28, we see Isaac praying on behalf of his wife who is barren. That's a godly response. We see Rebekah inquiring of the Lord, as I just mentioned. In chapter 26 and verse 6, we find that Isaac lives precisely where God tells him to live. This is a man that we've first known as a boy, that we have heard about before he was born, who showed tremendous faith up on Mount Moriah, who knew something about worship and about the sacrifice and where is the lamb for the sacrifice. Isaac was trained well and is a man of faith. And he's trying to do what God wants him to do. When he finally, they finally dig a well where there's no dispute, he will characterize that this way in chapter 26 and verse 22. The Lord has made room for us. I want you to just, is that the way you and I talk? We got the house that we put the offer down on. The Lord has made room for us. At some point, you can't fake that. His vocabulary gives him away. Chapter 26, verse 25, he builds an altar as his father has taught him to and calls on the name of the Lord. Even in his advanced age, as he's blessing the one he thinks is Esau, yeah, his thinking's skewed in the moment, but listen, it just comes out of him again. Chapter 27, verse 27. I just want you to notice his language. See the smell of my son. It's like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. It's not that Isaac has forgotten about God. I think something happens to Isaac along the way. And listen, this can happen to any one of us. You have a son or a daughter, and it just takes over your heart. Can I get an amen? I mean, it's powerful. We're told several times, it's interesting, how much Isaac loved the taste of venison, loved the taste of meat. And so I'm just offering that I think Isaac allows himself here to become too controlled by his senses, by his taste, and his smell. His faith in God is still there. Now, do you think Rebecca, I have no way of proving this either way. Let me just say this. I have to believe Rebecca shared with Isaac what the messenger of God said to her about the older will serve the younger. But there's so much about Esau that just resonates with Isaac. And he falls prey to a trap that many parents fall into. A bit of favoritism. Maybe they share some things in common. And that can very quickly distort your vision. And it would seem that Isaac is very intent on, in defiance of what he knows is going to come to pass. The older will serve the younger. Well, what else would you get? Okay, this isn't going to happen according to the cultural norm. Well, maybe as a decision of the will, I'll just make it happen anyway. And lo and behold, doesn't the Lord accomplish it anyway? Now, I know, as I mentioned before, his wife has to deceive him to make that happen. I'm going to say I struggle with that as much as anything. But I don't struggle with this. I think God uses that. And on some level, I think Rebecca's a hero. I think she believes what God has said. Again, I wrestle with that. Go ahead.
I think Isaac does too when Esau comes back and he trembles violently.
Yeah.
Let's
Go to, I want to read that in a second so everybody can hear it. Go to chapter 27 and verse, what is it? 33. I can see the words, but I cannot for the life of me see the number right now. So thank you. Look at this, 27:33. Once Isaac realizes, oh, look at what I just did. I bless Jacob. Then Isaac trembled violently.
I think he trembled because he realized that was God's will, and he was about to do just.
He was about. I mean, you could conclude, yeah, he's upset for the sake of his son Esau. I see more in that than just that factor. I think he's disappointed for Esau. But I think the trembling, I agree with you 1,000%. He realizes where he's almost put himself in direct opposition to the purpose and plan of God. And if not for the deception of his wife, I mean, what a sordid situation we get ourselves into where there are no good choices. I would challenge you. What would you have Rebecca do? I won't wait because you're going to have to come up. We're going to have to think a long time to come up with something else. I think she did the only thing that she could think of in the moment. This is God's will. And on some level, she helps get her husband's thinking back. She's a hero. To me, that's a Bible study thought. I would not be dogmatic about that. Please understand.
When she discussed it with Jacob beforehand, what they were going to do, and he said that I am going to be a deceiver and I'll bring a curse on myself and not a blessing, and she said, I'll take that curse for you.
Yep. She was willing to risk it all. Why else would the text tell us about this exchange that Rebecca has with the heavenly messenger if it doesn't connect later to this narrative? Look, we get these snippets of hundreds of years of living for a purpose. So I want you to go to Genesis 31 because we just have about a minute left here. Yeah, while we're turning. Yeah, let it be on me. Wouldn't any parent? I'll take the brunt. Yeah. Right. Look at Genesis 31. This is much later when Jacob and Laban are having some heated fellowship. And in verse 42 of Genesis 31. Let's go to 41. 32, 41. These 20 years I have been in your house. So he's just unloading on Laban. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and then in some Bibles this is capitalized, and the fear of Isaac. That's why I named this lesson. I call it the trust of Isaac. I wish I had just kept it at the fear of Isaac. When are we told that Isaac feared? In that moment that Mary just led us to. Now look at Hebrews 11. Verse 20. Hebrews 11, verse 20. By faith. Here's why I feel pretty solid about this take, because it's not mine. There's divine commentary on what we're to make of all of this. By faith, Isaac. Now he does bless both sons. Esau is not happy at all about the blessing he gets. Because he just begs it. Do you not just have one blessing for me? Well, then he blesses him. And I think it does serve to be a blessing to Esau eventually. But boy, in the moment, he is mad as anything. And holds a grudge and talks about violent actions toward his brother. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, even regarding things to come. Now, such a short statement. And you got to go back to the narrative to unpack all of that. But I think that's what that's referring to. Isaac was on the precipice there of being governed by the flesh and finding himself in direct opposition with God. But then his sweet wife yanked him out. It got him back to his senses. And his involuntary response was this trembling, shaking. And Isaac will ever be, I mean, what kind of faith would it take in Isaac? Isaac, I see Isaac here finally yielding. He loves Esau. He loves Jacob too, but he loves Esau. Isaac here has a moment where his faith, when he finally surrenders and he yields to the will of God. And for all the things we could remember Isaac for, and that's what he's remembered for. So, lesson to when you're in the fourth quarter of your life, what encouragement. You're going to have things that challenge your faith just as you did in your 20s, 30s, 40s, etc. There's an example there from Isaac as to how to handle your crisis of faith, no matter what stage of life you're at. Have we had the second tone, the second bell? Yes? Oh, he's just come to know. I'll just keep letting him go.